This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
Well, this evening we are back in the book of Genesis. We're in Genesis chapter number 11. I'll give you a moment to turn there while the preacher does the same thing. We've spent several weeks now in Genesis chapter 11 because it talks about the Tower of Babel. And we spent part of our time, two different weeks, over in the fellowship hall so we could use the television on the wall there for a PowerPoint presentation. The first week we talked about the religion that was created at the Tower of Babel and how all of the elements and the characters from that story are played out in virtually every religion of ancient cultures all over the world, no matter where you're talking about. And it's because they all had their beginnings at the Tower of Babel. So when God confounded the languages at the Tower of Babel and scattered people throughout the world, everywhere people went throughout the world, they took with them the bits and pieces of the truth, but they also took with them the false religion that was started at the Tower of Babel. That's why all of the religions in the ancient world, whether it's in the Americas or in Asia or in Africa or up in Europe, they all have basically the same pantheon of the same gods and goddesses in their false religion. The names are changed, but the story's pretty much the same, and it's all because it started at the Tower of Babel. Then that next week, we looked at symbols of that religion that have been around since ancient Babylon all the way up through the present. And we see a lot of those symbols in really even in corporations as well as religions that exist today in the 21st century. So the religion of Babylon, Mystery Babylon, as it's called in Revelation 13, is still alive and well, and we'll continue to move towards it, I think, as we get closer and closer to the rapture of the church and the tribulation period. But we're finished with the Tower of Babel, the story of the tower. We've spent several weeks on it. Now we're going to continue with chapter 11. And what we begin to see in verse 10 of this chapter is the lineage that will lead to Abraham and the call of Abraham. The creation by God of His chosen people in the Old Testament, a new nation that would be the nation through whom the Messiah would ultimately come. So we saw the descendants of Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, in chapter 10. Genesis 10 is referred to as the Table of Nations in the Old Testament, because it really shows the origin of most of the modern nations that are in the world still today. But now we're going to dig in depth into the lineage of Shem, one of Noah's sons. Before we do that, though, I want to turn your attention to the board up here. Now, no laughing about the preacher's hand-drawn map. It's one you've seen many times before. But just so we get our bearings on what this map represents, let's identify a few things. I think this is probably the easiest thing to identify. What river is this down here? This is the Nile River, so obviously this is Egypt down here. What's this big peninsula sticking out into the water? This is Asia Minor. It's what today is known as Turkey. In the New Testament, Paul just calls it Asia, but this is the modern-day country of Turkey. Here's the island of Cyprus. Here are two bodies of water. There's a body of water here and a body of water down here. What's the body of water up here in the north? The Sea of Galilee. And then what's the body of water down here to the south? The Dead Sea. Have you, Mary? Really salty, I hear. What's this river that joins the two? The Jordan River. All right, so we know that this here is the land of Israel. In the Bible, it's known as the land of Canaan. The Romans called it Palestine, named after the Philistines that lived along the coast here. So we know this is the modern-day country of Israel or thereabouts. Here's the Sinai Peninsula down here between Egypt and the land of Israel. Then we look further to the east. This is the Persian Gulf, around which so much of world events have taken place over the last 20 to 30 years. There are two rivers that spring from this area. What are those two rivers? The Tigris and the Euphrates. So which one of the rivers is it on the east side over here? This is the Tigris, and here's the Euphrates. The mighty Euphrates, like the mighty Mississippi, the city of Babylon was somewhere thereabouts, built right on the Euphrates River. We know that because the story in the book of Daniel tells us that when the Medes and the Persians had encompassed the city, besieged the city, and that's the night where the hand wrote on the wall, that night was when the Medes and the Persians went under the walls of the city by means of diverting the Euphrates River so that the river went low enough that they could go under the walls of the city where the river normally flowed, under the walls. And so the city of ancient Babylon was literally built on the Euphrates River. This area between the two rivers is where most of the early civilization grew up after the flood was over. Now, in your world history books, it was known as Mesopotamia, which literally means land between the two rivers. It's also in history referred to as the Fertile Crescent, because you see that there is somewhat a crescent shape here, and this is where much of ancient civilization began, at least after the flood. Even secular history records that. So it's the Fertile Crescent, or Mesopotamia. Now, the area where where Noah and his family settled on the ark after the flood, Mount Ararat, remember, it's not just one mountain, it's a range of mountains, a series of mountains. It's in this area in part of Turkey. And so what happened is the families of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, they scattered, they spread out from the land of Ararat. And what we saw in particularly in Genesis chapter number 10, try to use different colors here, is that the descendants of Japheth, most of them went northward. Those would be mainly your European countries and Russia. They moved northward. The descendants of Ham, Noah's son, they settled in the land of Canaan and then over to the west in Africa as well. The descendants of Ham. The descendants of Shem that we're going to see in depth tonight as we look at the lineage of Abraham. They settled mainly to the east. And so you kind of have the three sons and their grandsons who spread out in those different directions. But what we find is that this area that today we call the Middle East, one of the reasons it's still such a hotbed of crisis situation after crisis situation in world events today is that that's where the overlap was of these three sons and their descendants. So it's a mixture of people that are, well, they're related because we're all related back to Noah, but they are different than one another. And so right there in the Middle East, that's where there's so much controversy still in the world today, because it's a mixture of the descendants of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, all three. So we've seen the descendants of Shem in chapter 10, beginning in verse 21. I'll not read all those verses again, but look with me, if you would, back to chapter 10, verse 21, as we begin. It says, "Unto Shem also, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth, the elder, even to him were children born. The children of Shem, Elam, and Asher, and Arphaxad, and Lud, and Aram." So I'm going to try to show you on the map here where these different sons of Shem settled because it's the springboard into seeing the family of Abraham that was called. So it says that the first son of Shem was Elam. Now, Elam is the father of the Elamites. And the Elamites are the beginning of the modern-day country of Iran. And so that's where the Elamites live, the modern country of Iran. Then the next one is Asher. Asher was the one who settled the city of Nineveh up here in the northern part of Mesopotamia. So here's Asher. And then the next one is Arphaxad. Arphaxad was the father of the Chaldeans down here in the southern part of Mesopotamia, near the Persian Gulf, where the Tigris and the Euphrates River both have a common point down there. And then Lud. Lud, as best I could find from history and archaeology sources, they say that Lud is another name for the ancient civilization up here in Turkey known as Lydia. And it's still referred to even in the New Testament later on. And then last of all, the last son of Shem was Aram, from whom the name of the language, the Aramaic language, comes. That was the language of Syria. And so we'll put Aram right here where modern-day Syria is still located today. So these in red would be the locations of the sons of Shem who settled after the flood. So that brings us to Genesis chapter 11. You say, preacher, we haven't even gotten started yet. We're already well into the time together tonight. Well, look at verse 10. Chapter 11, verse 10. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Okay, this is the son we're talking about, Arphaxad, who settled down here in the land of Sumeria, the land of the Chaldeans, ultimately from whom the Chaldean civilization will spring. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. So this is after the flood. Remember, before the flood, people were living to be 900 years old, approximately. What we're going to see, as we've talked about before, is after the flood, that people will begin to live shorter and shorter and shorter lives till they get to the point of about 120 years. And then in the book of Psalms, David tells us the average span of a man's life is 70 years now, 70 years of age, which is about what our life expectancy is today. So here's Shem, though. Shem lives a total of 600 years. So we're going to try to keep a running record here and see how this changes over the course of time. Verse 13, and Arphaxad lived after he begat Selah 403 years and begat sons and daughters. So he lived 403 plus 35, so that'd be 438. Arphaxad. By the way, if anybody else would rather pronounce these names instead of the preacher, just raise your hand and I'll call on you when it's time to say the new names here. All right, it says, and Selah, verse 14, lived 30 years and begat Eber. And Selah lived after he begat Eber 403 years and begat sons and daughters. So there's 403 plus 30, so that's 433 for Selah. You see, we're kind of getting shorter and shorter. Let's see if it continues that trend. And Eber, excuse me, Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. So there's 430 plus 34. So what's that total? What's that? 464. So he kind of broke the trend we were headed down there. By the way, Eber is considered the father of the Hebrews. Heber, he will be the father through whom Abraham's lineage and the Hebrews' lineage comes. It says, and Peleg, verse 18, lived 30 years and begat Reu. And Peleg lived after he begat Reu 209 years and begat sons and daughters. So he's 209 plus 30, 239 for... Well, and again, keep in mind, Brother John, that's because in this society and that period of time in particular, everything was transmitted through the firstborn. And so we're basically getting the lineage of those who received the birthright in the family going down through there. The eldest son would receive a double portion of the inheritance and the right to be known as the head of the family after the father passed away. So that's why we only have the mention of the firstborn. Verse 20, and Reu lived 230 years and begat Serug. And Reu lived after he begat Serug 207 years and begat sons and daughters. So there's 207 plus 32, so that's 239 for Reu. Verse 22, and Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. And Serug lived after he begat Nahor 200 years and begat sons and daughters. So here's Serug, that's 230. I think what you see here, I'm going to stop writing on the board. I'm running out of room, and it's hard to keep up with all that while I'm talking and reading at the same time anyway. But you see, we start with Shem, who was born before the flood. But now, after the flood, you see the trend is people are living to be less and less number of years old after the flood is over. We'll see that continue. Now, Nahor is the one we got down to in verse 23. He's important, and here's why. Verse 24, and Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. Well, who's Terah? Anybody already know? Okay, we're about to find out. You know Mary? You're exactly right, Mary. He's Abraham's father. And so Nahor was Abraham's grandfather. So let's continue on, verse 25. Mary got it right. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. So we have two Nahors that are in the story here. We have Nahor, who's the grandfather of Abraham. Well, he gives birth to Terah, who is Abraham's father. Then Terah gives birth to Abraham, another Nahor, maybe you call him Nahor the second, and Haran. So three boys there. So I'm going to, now that we've seen how these ages decrease over time, I'm going to erase this, and I want us to kind of get here a little bit of a visualization of the lineage of Abraham. We have Nahor, Abraham's father Terah, who had three sons. There's Abraham, Abram at this point. There's Nahor. And Haran. Thank you. Flew right out of my memory. All right, so Terah has three sons, Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. So you kind of get the family structure here. Nahor is his grandfather. Terah is his father, and then he has two brothers. Look what it says now in verse 27. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abraham, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran begat Lot. So we know the story of Lot. We're going to go ahead and put him down here. So that makes Lot what relation to Abraham? He's the nephew. So Uncle Abraham and nephew Lot. Verse 28, and Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees, All right, so that brings us back to where this family is from. These are the descendants of Shem. In particular, which one of the sons of Shem? Arphaxad. That's right. So they are from Ur of the Chaldees. Ur of the Chaldees was located right down here near what we today call the Persian Gulf. The descendants of Arphaxad, the son of Shem. So this is where Abram and his family are from. Ur of the Chaldees. Can't you just imagine that? Where are you from, Ur? Get through clearing your throat and tell me where you're from. Ur. That's where they were from. Ur of the Chaldees. All right, so the Bible tells us here that Abram's brother Haran, who was Lot's daddy, he died there in their hometown. So we're going to go ahead and just kind of strike through Haran because he's deceased now at this point. Verse 29. And Abram and Nahor, the other two sons, took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no children. Now, we don't really know anything else about Nahor and his wife and their children because they're not central to the story that we're about to encounter. We're going to look at Abraham. And so Nahor, I'll put in parentheses here, his wife's name was Milcah. Abram's wife is Sarai. We know eventually God's going to change Abram's name to Abraham, Sarai's name to Sarah. We'll talk about the meanings of those names a little later. But this is the family we're going to be focused on now for the rest of the Old Testament. But they are related to a number of other families that we're going to see throughout the Old Testament. These descendants of Shem are going to have dealings with family up here, family up here. They're related to, directly or indirectly, all of these people of the ancient worlds because this is not too many generations removed from Noah. So the reality is all the people in the world not only are related to each other back to Noah, but at this point in time, they're all still pretty closely related to each other. But we're going to see how those divisions continue to grow over time. Verse 31, and Terah took Abraham his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abraham's wife, Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. And they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. All right, so the Bible says that Terah, Abram's father, left Ur of the Chaldees. He left Ur of the Chaldees after his son Haran had already died. So when he left Ur of the Chaldees, he took Abram, Abram's wife Sarai, and his grandson Lot with him, and they left Ur, and they went up here, and they settled in a place that is in the modern-day country of Syria, and they named the place that they settled after his son, who was already deceased at the time, Haran. And his plan was to come on down here to the land of Canaan to settle, but Terah died when they were still here in the place they called Haran, where they had set up camp. So that's where Abram is when God calls Abram to leave his family, to leave his home, and go somewhere else. Abram is from Ur of the Chaldees, but he had gone with his father up to Haran. So now Abram, he's the head of that household. It's Abram, his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot is living with them, in addition to whatever servants they had at the time. What the end of chapter 11 does with all that genealogy is it sets the stage for us to understand exactly who Abram is. and who the family of Abraham is. It's important so that we know how he's related to the rest of the people who settled in the ancient world, but also so we see that God is narrowing down from all of mankind to the three sons of Noah, to one of the sons of Noah and his family, Shem, to one of Shem's sons, Arphaxad, to one of Arphaxad's great-grandsons, Abraham. So God is whittling down, narrowing down, and then he chooses Abram to be the father of a brand new nation. It will be the Hebrews, the ones through whom the Messiah would come, that would be a blessing to all the families of the earth. Next week, Lord willing, on Sunday evening, we will see God give Abram the Abrahamic covenant, the promise of God upon Abraham. It is extremely important, and it is the basis for the rest of the Old Testament. It also is a comparison and contrast with the New Testament, the New Covenant, under which we live today. But we'll look in depth next week, Lord willing, at the Abrahamic covenant. I know this is a shock to you, but your preacher ended up early tonight. So are there any questions about anything we've covered here in Genesis chapter 11, either with the genealogy and Abraham tonight, or with the Tower of Babel, or Genesis 10 and the Table of Nations that we looked at? Any questions at all? Milton?
I'm presuming that Abraham and his relatives before him, father and so forth, were following closely way more so than some of the other members of the extended family to God's will, right?
Milton asked a good question. And Milton, I'm just going to tell you, when I was in Bible college, that was one of the exact same questions I asked one of my the pastors that taught us in Bible college. His question was, is Abraham and his family who came from Ur of the Chaldees, were they still following the true and living God more so than the rest of these heathen were? Because we know after the Tower of Babel, when all the people scattered throughout the ancient world, and this is after the Tower of Babel, but it's kind of in conjunction with that same contemporary time period, there were a lot of those people that were following the false religion started by Nimrod, Semiramis at the Tower of Babel. And so sometimes I think we get in our minds a false picture that all the rest of the people in the world, that they were all following the false religion. But the truth is, there were still people in places all around the world that were not following the religion of Babylon, that were still worshiping the true and living God. You know, I think those who are our Presbyterian friends, our primitive Baptist friends who believe in hyper-Calvinism, what we know commonly as predestination. Predestination is a biblical doctrine, but there's an unbiblical view of predestination also that I think our Presbyterian friends and our primitive Baptist friends adhere to. And that their belief and their teaching is that Abraham was a heathen just like the rest of the heathen, and that God just reached down and called a heathen out of the world and said, I'm going to do something special for you. I don't think that's the case, Milton. So I'm going to give you my best answer as a Baptist preacher. I think Abram's family was one of the families in the earth that was still worshiping the true and living God at this point. And I don't think they were the only ones, because you remember, hundreds and hundreds of years later, when the children of Israel are in Egypt and Moses flees Egypt to the land of Midian, which is over here in modern-day Saudi Arabia, by the way, Moses goes over there and finds the daughter of Jethro that he ends up marrying, and Jethro was the high priest of the living God there in the land of Midian. His family, the family of Jethro, they were still worshiping the true and living God, but they weren't Hebrews. They weren't Jews by any sense. So there were still families of the earth in different places, even after the Tower of Babel, that were still worshiping the true and living God in different places. And I think My personal feeling is that God didn't choose an unsaved man to be the one that would be the father of this new nation. I think God called Abram. I think when God called Abram, he was already someone who had put his faith in God. I think that I don't think he was just a heathen living among a bunch of other heathen. But that is what our Presbyterian friends would have us to believe. Sure.
Shem had heard what his father told him. And we don't know about the rest of
them. Well, that's true. And, you know, the Bible also, we read in Genesis chapter 10 about Asher. Asher moved, he left the area where Nimrod set up his kingdom around Babel and founded Nineveh up to the north. A lot of Bible scholars suggest that maybe Asher, who was a descendant of Shem, maybe he moved north and founded the city of Nineveh to get away from the Hamites, who were already ungodly. It seems like right after the flood, with that incident revolving around Noah getting drunk and the curse upon Ham's son Canaan, it seems like the descendants of Ham immediately began to fall away from God, and the descendants of Shem, at least some of them, continued to follow the true and living God for a time after the flood was over. So that's my best answer. But that's a good question. That's a very deep theological question. And depending on who you ask, you'll get different answers on that one. Anybody else? Questions? Comments? Comments?